So announcements, so we will be doing experiment 2 next week. Talk more about that on Monday. This one is going to be outside of class hours. So I'll put up again a doodle to schedule things. We'll try to give enough time so that everybody can find something that works. If you have a highly constrained schedule, don't have any free time, any afternoons, let me know now, or if you don't find the time on the doodle, let me know. We'll try to find something else. Limitation there is just the lab is locked unless we have somebody there. So I don't want to say we're going to staff that 24/7, force myself or someone else to just sit down there waiting in hopes some of you guys come join us. We're going to kind of limit those, but we'll put a number of times so that every group can get in there, and then we'll be limited to 5 groups at a time based on the stations. Right? But it is posted, the procedure. So you can begin having a look at that, make sure you've read through it before you and your group show up so that you can complete it in, you know, hopefully less than an hour as far as the experimental, and then there'll be some more work that needs to be done in terms of simulation and analytical modeling. We'll talk a little bit about that on Monday. Okay. I have the midterms. We'll use the last 10, 15 minutes of class to talk about those and turn them back. Okay.
Will we get back the graded labs from the first experiment?
Yeah. I kind of prioritize midterm by today, but I'll try to get those done soon. I'll make sure to have those back before you begin writing up experiment 2, so you know if there's any critical deficiencies. Okay. So where are we? We've been talking about these small signal models of our converters, how to derive transfer functions and plot them. We went through last time and modified our kind of toolbox of transfer function characteristics that we know how to plot, in addition to all of the real real poles and zeros, whether inverted or not, whether left half plane or right half plane. We added now complex poles, complex zeros, same behavior, just flipped. So now all of these characteristics that we're going to see in our transfer function, we know how to plot them, and we just take these different characteristics from our toolbox, we multiply them together, we just add up the behavior, and we can plot whatever transfer function we encounter. The low Q approximation really was just a situation where we can take something that looks like a complex pole and split it apart into 2 real poles, making our life a little bit simpler. For Q less than a half, what frequencies those 2 real poles will be at. And then as far as plotting this in the phase, it looks just like 2 real poles at these 2 frequencies. So before we wrap up chapter 8, I want to do another example of solving transfer functions, and then have kind of a side comment, and then we'll finish chapter 8 and move into chapter 9. So this is back to the buck boost we started with, and we had previously solved GVD kind of at the start as a motivation. GVD was, I'm going to write it here, VG minus V over D prime times 1 minus SLI over VG minus V over 1 plus SL over D prime R, D prime squared R, plus S squared LC over D prime squared. And that's from 2-3 lectures ago. We went and solved that. We said this looks like a standard form of, we'll call GD0 times 1 minus S over omega Z over our complex pole pair, 1 plus S over Q omega naught plus S over omega naught squared. Okay. So So when we plot this thing, got is some low frequency gain, GD naught, and then this double pole, which as long as Q is greater than a half, is going to be two poles with some resonant Q. If Q is less than a half, we're able to split that up into two real poles. Can't say value of Q until I plug in some numbers, which we'll do in a moment. Okay. And then we'll have a zero, a right half plane zero. It's going to be at a frequency omega z. Zero means the gain is going to increase in its slope by 20 dB per decade, but the phase is going to roll off as if it was a pole. Okay. So we did that one. Now I just want to solve two other transfer functions about this. So we'll look at two that are a bit easier. GVG, my line to output transfer function. Transfer function from VG hat to V hat. Again, by superposition, I'm going to be able to evaluate this on my circuit, setting all other independent inputs to zero. In this case, that's D hat. I'm going to only consider perturbations on VG hat when I'm looking at this transfer function, not on D hat. So if I do that, setting D hat to zero, this current source goes to zero, which is an open. Same thing here. This voltage source goes to zero, 0 volts is a short. And everything is greatly simplified. Now, if I want to solve this transfer function, what I'll do is reflect this inductance over to the output. We'll scale through the transformer, and what I'll get is an L over D prime squared. And then what I'm left with is this voltage source, two transformers, and an impedance divider. That means that if I can reflect the voltage source through the two transformers, then this transfer function will just be an impedance divider. If I reflect VG through, I'm going to pick up a D from this transformer, and then a minus D, 1 over D prime from this one, because it is inverting from the dot notation. What we'll have is minus D over D prime from the transformer scaling of this voltage source. That'll get me to right here. And then I'll just write my impedance divider. This is 1 over SC in parallel with R over SL over D prime squared plus 1 over SC in parallel with R. So that's my GVG. I can simplify this a bit. Leaving this out front, 1 over SC in parallel with R is going to look like R over 1 plus SCR. And so I'll have R over 1 plus SCR here and here. Simplify things, then I'm going to multiply top and bottom by the reciprocal of that. So it's going to look like 1 over plus 1, and this term will be SL over D prime squared times 1 plus SCR over R. And then if I multiply this out, here becomes 1st part will become, well, let's do the second term first. I'll get S squared LC, R's will cancel over D prime squared plus SL over D prime squared times 1 over R, SL over D prime squared R. Plus 1. In my standard form, this looks like some gain out front, GG0, that is my low frequency gain, 1 over a pair of complex poles. this would look like some low frequency gain, then a double pole, potentially with some resonant Q. Okay. And then the last one I'll look at is the output impedance. For this, I'm going to add some I-out hat, which models any perturbations and how much current is going to the load. With this source in there, my output impedance is V-hat over I-out hat. Can also think of it as just when I look into this port, what is the impedance I see? Looking at the converter from this direction. Okay. Again, by superposition, when I'm solving this, I out hat is going to be my only independent source that I leave on. So I can set D hat to zero and that's 3 VG hat to 0. I drew it after the fact, but if it was already there back here, I out hat would have gone to 0, which would have been an open, and it would have disappeared anyway. Okay, so I'm going to keep the manipulations I already did. I reflected this inductor through. Since D hat is still zeroed, all those sources will still be off. Change is going to be now that VG hat is set to zero, which is a short, and that short will reflect through both transformers and create an effective 0 volts right here, effective short at the secondary of the second transformer. So looking in at the impedance, all I'm going to see is R in parallel with C in parallel with L over D prime square. Questions so far? Seeing a lot of brows furrowed here.
Can you say again how you get
just the first expression? Okay, so the very first expression, this I out hat would be gone. Don't worry about what I just said for Z out here. So when I'm solving for a transfer function, right, this circuit, the reason we derived this AC circuit in the way we did is because we wanted something that was averaged, linearized, small signal, right? So this has been linearized. It's now a linear system. So we can apply things like superposition. So when I want to know a transfer function from one input to one output, I shut off all other independent inputs. So I'm just considering VG as my input, V hat as my output, and I can shut off D hat and I out hat if I have it by superposition. So the first thing I do is I zero D hat. Setting D hat to zero makes this current source have value zero, and zero current is an open. Same thing over here. Makes this voltage source have value zero, 0 volts is a short. Right. So what I'm left with is this circuit where I still have VG, something we did in the next step, but then nothing but transformer, inductor, transformer, RC. Okay. So that, I can now, if I wanted to resketch everything, I'd reflect everything through to the output, right? So I push the inductor over to the output. I get scaling by 1 over D prime squared, L over D prime squared. Then I can push this transformer through. If I push it here, I'll get DVG hat. And if I push it through the next transformer, I'll get that over D prime with a negative sign. Flips. Okay. technically the inductor flipped as I pushed it through the inverting transformer, but an inductor looks like an inductor either way. Okay. So what I end up with then is, pick a different color, this voltage source here after I reflect through that looks like minus E over D prime times VG hat, L over D prime squared, RC, and then it's just an impedance divider, right? These two in parallel, that one in series. So V is equal to this voltage times this impedance over the sum of the impedances, which is that expression. Does that make sense? Going to jump. Well, depends on how I'm sketching things. The impedance is SL over D prime squared. The inductance is L over D prime squared. So I could transfer this whole thing into the Laplace domain. I'd write this as 1 over SC, but that's just how I'm drawing the schematic. It's just the values, not the impedances. Down here, I care about the impedance, right? So it's got SL over D prime squared as the impedance of it. Oh, yeah. I just didn't write that. Thank you. Okay. Other questions? All right. So let me take this and simplify it out and see what this looks like and what it would be in standard form. So three things in parallel, I'll just do the sum of the admittances. Look like 1 over R plus SC plus D prime squared over SL. And then to get this in standard form, I'm going to multiply top and bottom by the reciprocal of this term. I want to get the S's out of the denominator in the denominator. So look like S times L over D prime squared up here, and down here you get SL over D prime squared R plus S squared LC over D prime squared plus 1. That looks like some Z, it's called ZX, which is L over D prime squared times S over omega naught squared plus S over Q omega naught plus 1. Okay. So L over D prime squared, I just called it ever ZX. I'm not calling it Z naught like I did here and here. Here I've got a low frequency zero, which means that the low frequency gain is going to be going down to minus infinity. This is not the low frequency gain. It's just some scale factor. Okay. Here, if I have only poles at omega naught, no zeros, nothing at low frequency, then this is the low frequency gain. Okay. So what do we notice about these transfer functions? One thing is all of them the exact same poles. That's characteristic of linear systems. Any transfer function through this system is going to have the same poles. And every one, the denominator is S squared LC over D prime squared plus S L over D prime squared R. Only the zeros and the gain change. Right. So Q omega naught, they're characteristics of the system, not a given transfer function. They're going to be the same for any transfer function of this converter. Now, if I want to go and plot these, I'm going to assign some numerical values to things. I'll take these three transfer functions. Here is the numbers I'm assigning for this converter. And then over on the right are some derived values to help me plot. L over D prime squared is 1 millihenry. And then resonant frequency Q is 4, which is greater than 0.5, so these will be a complex pole pair. 0 frequency, low frequency gains of my controlled output and lined output transfer function. Okay. First two, controlled output and lined output, we'll just look at. Here is the controlled output transfer function looks like. Recall this one had right half plane 0, and then my same denominator, some low frequency gain. I'm going to have a complex pair of poles, right half plane 0, GD naught is my low frequency gain. It's been simplified a bit, but it's the same expression. Then I first hit my complex poles. Here I see a break. My gain is flat and then drops to minus 40 dB per decade. Because of this complex pole pair, I'm hitting two poles, getting minus 20 dB per decade from each. Got a Q somewhere greater than a half, so it resonates up the magnitude of Q above the straight line approximation. And then at some higher frequency, I see the zero. It is a right half plane 0. So even though the gain increases by 20 dB per decade, the phase decreases by 90 degrees. My phase starts at 0 at low frequency and ends up at minus 270. I get 90 degrees from the 0 and then 180 degrees from the pair of poles. For the pair of poles, I see this 180 degree roll off. It happens between 10 to the minus 1 over 2q and 10 to the 1 over 2q times that resonant frequency. Pretty sharp roll off of 180 degrees. Okay. The lined output transfer function is going to be a little simpler. This expression here, we're going to have a low frequency gain and then this pair of complex poles, but no zero. Let's plot that. Looks like this. Low frequency gain, pair of complex poles, and then it just continues rolling off at minus 40 dB per decade out to high frequency. Phase drops from 0 to minus 180 around these poles and then sticks there. Okay. So output impedance, I can do the same way. Plot this by saying, okay, at low frequency, I've got a 0 at DC, so I'm going to be going up at 20 dB per decade. And then I'm going to have a pair of poles, so it's going to resonate and then drop at minus 20 dB per decade. Okay. So I would expect this to look like, on the magnitude, something like this, plus 20, minus 20, some Q, just from looking at the characteristics of it. The phase is going to be 90 degrees, then drop to minus 90 degrees, the vicinity of this pole. Do all that the same way. I'm going to instead use this as another example of using this impedance paper, one that has an actual Q. Okay. So for that, I can back up to really just this point. My output impedance is just a parallel combination of these three impedances, R, 1 over SC, and SL over D prime squared. Three impedances are 10 ohms, L over D prime squared is 1 millihenry, C is 160 microfarads. I use this impedance paper. I'm going to first plot the asymptotes of those three impedances. So 10 ohms is this, which is my magnitude of R. SL over D prime squared is S times 1 millihenry. That is this line here. And then my 1 over SC, 160 microfarads, somewhere slightly below this 100 microfarads. Z out is three of these in parallel. Okay. So we have this approximation that on Bode plots, whenever I add things together, I can really just take the biggest one. Bode's plots are so compressed that everywhere on this plot, when I say, okay, which of these lines is bigger? Well, here it's 100 times bigger, 40 dB difference. So when I look at three impedances in parallel, they're all in parallel, so I can really say the total impedance is just going to be dominated by the smallest one over most of the frequency range. So if I plot that over the frequency range, what I get is at low frequency, it looks like this inductor. High frequency, it looks like this capacitor. And that's going to be a good approximation everywhere where there's pretty good separation between these impedances. It's really just kind of in this region that we might have to rethink it, where the impedances are pretty close to being equal. Okay. So the definition here, when I have an inductor and a capacitor, the frequency and the impedance at which they cross, I want to solve for what those are. Okay. So these two impedances are going to cross when the magnitudes of the impedances are equal. So that's going to be when, I have room, magnitude of 1 over SC is equal to magnitude of SL. Okay, I'm going to plug in, be J omega L. This would be minus J over omega C. Both of these are purely imaginary, so I can just take the magnitude. This is 1 over omega C. This is omega L. That's going to happen at some frequency. Multiply by omega, divide by L, I'll get omega is equal to 1 over root LC. That's what we call omega naught. That's the frequency at which these two are equal. The impedances are equal. I can plug that frequency into either of these expressions, figure out what the impedance is. I plug omega naught into omega times L. What we get is 1 over root LC times L. And push L into the radical, get L squared over LC under the radical, cancel out. What we get is the impedance here, R naught is root L over C. And I have to amend my notation, call this LE, the effective inductance. In this case, my effective inductance is L over D prime squared. For this specific example, I have L over D prime squared over C. Okay. That's generally true of any LC resonance. Put the two together, it's going to have a characteristic impedance, resonant frequency, which impedance will be LE over CE, whatever the inductance and capacitance are. Okay, so from this, what's going to happen at this frequency? So the magnitudes of the impedances are equal, but if I kind of step back before I took the magnitude, the impedances themselves, one is J omega L, so it's imaginary and it's positive. One is minus J over omega C, so it's imaginary and it's negative. So when I put these two together, they are equal and opposite impedances. I take a magnitude, I take an absolute value. I don't care about the fact that one's negative, one's positive. But now when I put them in parallel, and those impedances are equal and opposite, they're going to cancel each other. I'm going to get zero in the denominator when I do the parallel impedance. The impedance is going to explode to infinity. So if I consider just the L and the C in resonance, what I would get around this part is it's going to go to infinity. What I'd have is an infinite Q resonance here. And overall impedance would look something like this. But fortunately, I don't just have these two impedances in parallel. I also have an R in parallel with that. So as these two explode up to infinity, then my total impedance, I'm going to have R in parallel with this thing that looks like an open. So my complete impedance here is going to look like purple. This here. Okay. Now I've solved the whole thing without having to do any algebraic manipulation. I've got a double pole at omega naught. I have this low frequency zero, DC zero, we're looking for. My Q, I could read off the graph. Q here is R minus R naught. Well, give myself some room. Magnitude of Q in dB, magnitude of R minus magnitude of R naught. If I want to go back into linear units, if I'm subtracting in the log domain, means I'm dividing in the linear scaling. Okay. Impedance paper can be a very useful tool for constructing these, particularly when you have something more complex. These three, okay, we already did it. We did the manipulation. We could have just plotted it the normal way. But if I had some kind of six impedances in parallel, working through that algebra is going to be a pain. But as long as the frequencies are well separated, I can plot it on here, no problem, without having to do any of that algebra. Same thing if I wanted to do, I could have done GVD or GVG on here. Okay, as we did before with the single pole. Okay, last thing before we wrap up chapter 8, I just wanted to go back and readdress kind of a perspective on what we're doing based on a question I got in office hours. And the question I got in office hours was, why do we keep talking about injecting sinusoids into this thing if it's a DC to DC converter? We don't want the duty cycle to vary sinusoidally. We want it to be flat, and we want this thing to have a DC output. So I just want to readdress that, make sure that's clear to everybody. So what I'm going to talk about is, say we have this converter, some buck, and initially it's open loop. And I'm trying to regulate the output voltage to some value. And at first I'm doing a good job setting V out to, call it V out star, whatever my converter is supposed to be doing at the output voltage. Okay. And then my input voltage at some point has some step change for reasons beyond my control. It's my VG. It increases. Okay. So what is my output voltage going to do? If I don't have any kind of control on this, Vout is DVG and slightly modified when I have any sort of losses. So it's going to eventually increase a proportional amount, right? VD is a half, and V out, or VG steps by 1 volt, my output voltage is going to increase by 0.5 volt. Okay. If I have no control, if I'm in open loop. So that's an argument based on our steady state model that tells me where it's going to end up. What it's going to do in between depends now on our dynamic model, but for the moment, let's just say it does something like this. And it's not going to jump there instantaneously. It's going to take time as the output voltage goes up, as the input voltage goes up. Well, I've got this big cap at the output. It takes time to charge that. I don't have infinite current to give it a step. There's going to be some dynamics my output voltage is going to move and then eventually settle out in open loop to its new steady state value. Okay. So what we're trying to do is to model, okay, what is that behavior? What are the dynamics? Does it go quickly? Does it ring? What happens? This is clearly a step response. This thing, if we look at it in the frequency domain, a step has frequencies out to infinity, right? So I'm not injecting any kind of pure sinusoid here, but I'm giving this step. If I looked at Fourier transform of that, I'm going to have a bunch of frequency content from DC up to infinity. Okay. Now, I'm hoping that I can design some controller, some feedback network that will notice that the output voltage has increased above my Vout star where I want it to be, and then change duty cycle, change operation to bring it back where it's supposed to be. That's going to have its own dynamics. It's not going to see that and instantly know exactly where the duty cycle needs to go, and it's not going to be able to charge the cap infinitely quickly. So even in closed loop, what I'm going to get is something that has some deviation, and I can design to try to minimize that. There'll always be something. I can potentially make it even faster if I'm willing to tolerate some ringing, some trade-off between how quick and how much ringing, how much overshoot, how much error. But I can design this thing to bring it back so that it doesn't have this error in steady state. So how do I design this controller? Well, I want it to do many different things. Okay, from here to here, I'm talking about really my steady state response, my DC response. Once there's a transient, where does it end up? After a long time, okay, very slowly, it's going to go back. Do I have error or not? That's kind of what are the DC dynamics of my loop. This stuff, this is my low frequency dynamics. Maybe if I don't design it well, there's still a little bit of error. And that would have to do with my low frequency control design. Even after infinite time, that error is still there. And this stuff here is high frequency dynamics over a whole range of frequencies. Out and above where my controller is even fast enough to respond to. Okay. So we use tools in the frequency domain to analyze this. And what we're doing as we go through and analyze this converter is not really injecting sinusoids, but trying to characterize in the frequency domain what is the response of this circuit to some perturbations. Okay. And the way we talk about that is really with the mindset of actually doing things experimentally, shown on the next slides very briefly. But if I want to figure out experimentally what is GVD, which is the gain from some perturbation in duty cycle to some perturbation in voltage. One way I can do that is I can take my duty cycle and put some d hat, which is a sinusoidal perturbation, at some f naught on top of my regular duty cycle. Oops, I've done something bad. Okay. So I put a perturbation on the duty cycle at a given frequency, and then I look at the output voltage, and to the extent I can model this as a linear system, I figure out, okay, I put a 10% duty cycle perturbation, I got a 1 volt perturbation at the output. So So I have a gain of 1 volt per 10% or 10. So now at F0, I have a gain here. I can also look at the phase of those two sinusoids to get my phase plot. Okay. And then I change to F1, apply something, look at what the gain is, and I change to F-1, look at what the gain is, and eventually kind of construct, here's my Bode plot. Okay. Experimentally, that's how we might have to do it. Analytically, I just say, okay, D-hat is an AC perturbation, and then solve the whole thing as a function of S. So I solve out all frequencies at once. I don't need to plug in one frequency at a time and add these points up. Okay. So that's why when I talk about putting an AC perturbation, what I'm talking about is just characterizing the system and getting this frequency response. In our real application here, we wouldn't have any AC perturbation, but we would have used that modeling to design this controller. Then what would happen around this perturbation, my duty cycle would drop a little bit, have some dynamics, do something like this, is my D of T to respond to this perturbation, wouldn't suddenly have a sinusoid and ring out. Okay. Briefly, the next couple here, just talking about how you actually go about measuring these things on real circuits. So one way we characterize transfer functions is through a network analyzer. A network analyzer is it's got an injection source that is going to do exactly what we just said. It's going to give you a sinusoidal signal, and it's going to vary the frequency across some range. And then it has two inputs, what you want to call the input of your transfer function and what you want to call the output. And it looks at both of them, divides them, and then looks at the magnitude and phase relative to the input. Okay, so it measures the magnitude of its two inputs and the phase of them, has some injection source that you use, so you, for a converter, you set it up, get it operating and running at your steady state bias point, and then you inject onto the duty cycle and measure from duty cycle to output voltage. Measuring the two, it'll take the magnitude and phase for you. It might look something like this. There are some details that the book talks about. We won't actually do this. I won't spend much time here. But for example, if I was measuring from input to output, I need to inject an AC perturbation on top of a big input voltage. You may have to use things like DC blocking caps to couple AC on while elsewhere you're establishing the DC. Okay. And then you can measure input to output and end up with the transfer function. Okay. So that's all for chapter 8. What we did is we went over, talked about different Bode plot techniques, different characteristics of Bode plots and straight line approximation, including complex poles and the low Q approximation, how to plot them, including impedances, different transfer functions. From there, we're going to move into chapter 9, where we now use solving these transfer functions, being able to plot them and look at Bode plots to design controllers that have these behaviors that we want. We'll pick up there next class.